The creature drummed rapidly on the desktop, but Dietrich was unsure what mood this represented. In a man, it might signify impatience or frustration. It was clear that the Kratzer sought to communicate certain thoughts that fit poorly within the vocabulary that his talking head had thus far provided, and so Dietrich must tease the meaning from the words, much as thread is teased from wool. The Herr Geschert had been listening to the byplay from his usual position, leaning casually against the far wall. Now he buzzed and clacked, and the talking head picked up some of what he said through the small sound automaton to which Dietrich had given the Greek name microphone. "How does this discussion use?" The Kratzer said, "Each knowledge uses always." Dietrich did not think the utterance was meant for him, and kept a blank face, although blank faces might convey weighty matters to such an expressionless folk as the Krenk. The servant who groomed the talking head turned a little, and while his great faceted eyes never looked on anything squarely, Dietrich had the uncanny feeling that the servant had glanced his way to gauge his reaction. The servant's soft upper and lower lips came together and parted in a slow, silent version of what the priest had come to consider crankish laughter. "I do believe that I have seen one of them smile." The thought came unbidden and left him with a curious sense of comfort. "The twofold number is the smallest piece of knowledge," the Kratzer instructed him. "I disagree," said Dietrich. "It is not knowledge at all. A sentence may impart knowledge, even a word may, but not a number that represents a mere sound." The Kratzer rubbed his forearms together in what appeared an absent-minded fashion, and Dietrich thought that the act signified something like what a man would mean by scratching his head or rubbing his chin. "The fluid that drives the talking head," the Kratzer said after a moment, "differs from that which drives your mill. But we may know something of the one by study of the other. Do you have a word that signifies this?" "Analogy, many thank. Hear this analogy, then. You may break a pot into shards, and these shards into fragments, and the fragments into dust, but even the dust can be broken into the smallest possible pieces."
"Ah! You must mean the atoms of Democritus."
"You have a word for this?" The Kratzer turned to Herr Geschert, and in another aside translated by the talking head, said, "If they know such matters, there may yet give help." But the Herr replied, "Say nothing of it." On hearing this, Dietrich glanced curiously at the servant. "The analogy," said the Kratzer, "is that the twofold number is the atom of knowledge. For the least you can say about a thing is that it is, which is one, or it is not, which is null." Dietrich was unconvinced. That a thing existed might well be the most one could say of it, since there was no reason save God's grace for anything to exist at all. But he said nothing of these doubts. "Let us then use the term bitchen for this twofold number of yours. It means a little bite, or a very small amount. So it may as well mean a small bite of knowledge. No one has ever seen Democritus' atoms, either." The metaphor of a bit amused him. He had always thought of knowledge as something to drink, the springs of knowledge, but it could as well be something to be nibbled. "Tell me more," said the Kratzer, "about your numbers. Do you apply them to the world?"
"If appropriate."
"Astronomers calculate the positions of the heavenly spheres. And William of Heytesbury, a Merton calculator, applied numbers to the study of local motion, and showed that commencing from 0 degree, every latitude, so long as it terminates finitely, and so long as it is acquired or lost uniformly, will correspond to its mean degree of velocity." Dietrich had spent many hours reading Heytesbury's Rules for Solving Sophismas, which Manfred had presented him, and had found the proof from Euclid very satisfying. The Kratzer rubbed his forearms together. Explain what means that. Simply said, a moving body, acquiring or losing latitude uniformly during some assigned period of time, will traverse a distance exactly equal to what it would have traversed in an equal period of time if it were moved uniformly at its mean degree. Dietrich hesitated, then added, "So wrote Heytesbury, so nearly as I recollect his words." Finally, the Kratzer said, "It must be this. Distance is half the final speed by the time." He wrote on a slate, and Dietrich saw symbols appear on the Heinzelmannkind's screen. His heart thudded as the Kratzer assigned to each symbol distance, speed, and time. Here was Fibonacci's idea, letters used to state the propositions of Al-Jabr so succinctly that entire paragraphs could be said in one short line. He pulled a palimpsest from his script and wrote with a charcoal using German letters and the Arab numbers. Ah, how much more clearly it could be said! His vision blurred and he wiped his eye. Thank you, O God, for this gift. "So, we see the fruits of the Holy Ghost," he said at last. "The Heinzelmannkind is unsure. Ghost is when you breathe out, and what has this to do with motion?" There was a great question for us. Does a man participate in unchanging spirit more or less, or does spirit itself increase or decrease in a man? We call that the intention and remission of forms, which by analogy we may apply to other motions. Just as a succession of forms of different intensities explains an increase or decrease in the intensity of color, so the succession of new positions acquired by emotion may be considered as a succession of forms representing new degrees of that motion's intensity. The intensity of a velocity increases with speed no less than the redness of an apple increases with ripening. The giant grasshopper shifted in his seat and exchanged looks with the servant, saying something which the microphona did not this time translate. An exchange between the two escalated, growing louder, with the servant half rising from his seat and the Kratzer smacking his forearm against the desktop, while Herr Geschert looked on with no change in his posture, save the slow rhythmic scissoring of his horny side lips. Dietrich had grown accustomed to these wild arguments, although they unnerved him with their sudden vehemence. They were like thunder weather, blowing up from nowhere and passing just as quickly. The Kranken were a choleric race, like the Italians, or they were under some great strain. When the Kratzer had reachieved his balance, he said, "This has been said by another." Dietrich knew he meant the servant. "You speak a word. The Heinzelmannkind repeats it in our tongue, but has it spoken what has been said?" "That is a great problem in philosophy," Dietrich admitted. "The sign is not the signified, nor may it convey the entire significance." The Kratzer threw his head back briefly in a gesture whose meaning Dietrich had not yet plumbed. "Now we hear it," the Krenk complained. "The poor Heinzelmannkind is speechless. What is a problem? What is a philosophy? How can the ripening of a fruit or your holy breath be like the speed of a falling body?" The servant spoke again, and this time the box translated his words. "The box that speaks stands the word philosophy, not in the German tongue." "Philosophy," Dietrich explained, "is a Greek word. The Greeks are another people, like the Germans, but more ancient and learned, save that their great days were long ago. The word means love of wisdom, and wisdom is what meaning?" All at once, Dietrich felt pity for Zeno's Achilles, running forever after the tortoise, coming always incrementally closer, yet never in fact reaching it. "Wisdom is, perhaps, having the answers to a great many questions. Our Philosophers are those who seek answers to such questions.